We'll start, Mr. Manager, with our discussion of the Sheriff's Street parking structure.
You will remember well our conversation at the last council meeting about Short Street Garage. We've had a bit of a sticker shock with the bids that came back. We have an approach that you accepted at your last meeting to accommodate that to a certain degree as we continue to look for ways to save money on the project. And so what we have to present to you tonight is a combination of information, both related to questions that you asked at the last meeting and also ongoing work to try to lower the cost of the project. So with that, I'd ask Tony to take us through.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to our consultants here. We've, as Mr. Mathis said at our last meeting, we did award the contract. The contract has now been awarded to Killian for the bid amount of $9.6 million. I think, as Mr. Mathis stated last time, it's our goal to try to come in under budget, and so we've asked Walker Parking to come up with a couple of, actually several different options, but are kind of categorized as either architectural or non-architectural. So we also have Chris Davis here from Peckham and Wright, who did the original design of the facade. So when you start looking at some of the architectural changes that you'll see in the PowerPoint that we'll go through, you'll actually be able to see what the impact of those changes will be on the actual garage itself. So with that said, I'm going to ask Dave Ryan to kind of go through the PowerPoint and then for Chris to kind of show us some of the slides that he prepared showing the differences in the architectural.
All right, thank you, Tony. As Tony mentioned, the presentation will review potential cost reduction items that impact exterior architectural appearance. The four cost items that are going to be associated with this were in the packet that was presented to you at the last council meeting. After we go through those four bullet items, I'll turn it over to Chris. Chris is going to run you through some images to help explain what those changes do visually to the structure. And then we'll review some additional potential reduction items. We've been working with Killian over the past couple weeks to try to identify other items that we can value engineer out of the project to reduce the cost. Then we'll kind of run you through the process that we plan to use during the construction to value engineer those items, and then we'll also have a slide that reviews the bid alternates. So in terms of items that impact the exterior architectural appearance, and these again were in your packets last time, we have elimination of exterior protrusions on the exterior panels, eliminate the brick returns at the openings, eliminate the steel canopies around the structure, and eliminate the exterior steel infill grating. The total potential deductions, as shown here, $180,365. These are numbers that we got directly from Killian. That's why there's no range to them. At this point, I'll turn it over to Chris. The thought was you have the packets in front of you with these items on it, and then Chris can run through the slides and explain how each of these impacts the appearance.
I'll thumb through the images. The October presentation is what we used to work around, and we have before and after slides, if you will, from what is in the bid versus some cost savings ideas and the impacts of those visually. So the view from Broadway, the current design, we've got a few images that get a lot closer to see the impact of the cost savings ideas. Some of the further ones away are a little harder to discern the differences. But what you get, and I'll kind of go back and forth, is a savings of items along the tops of most all of the precast panel facades, and also occasionally items that work their way down in the facades as well that protrude out from the face of the brick. So the closer we can get things to one face of the brick as opposed to these multiple levels will help save some costs there. Also, as you start looking through these, the canopies are another item on here. So kind of a back and forth comparison. Start to see the impact of taking out a lot of the detail with canopies out, with the tops and the protrusions out. Also starting to get into some of the gratings and the openings that we have for fall protection and such from a code perspective. And we can back up and go through any of these that you want to. The southwest corner, so this is kind of looking from the alleyway, looking back to the northeast. We're removing the canopies, changing the tops of the building. A lot of the brick sills at the windows and the openings are going away. This is one of the images where we're up close enough that we can start to see when we get rid of the grating in the openings. And when we work to replace it with fall protection, we end up with some stainless steel cables that'll run through on 4-inch centers, and it's a lot less visual. It's a little more cost-effective way to meet the code requirements. Still looking at the southwest corner. Going around that southwest side. Yeah, and another item is, as Dave was pointing out, that you'll start to see in these closer slides, the brick returns and the colored returns start to go away, and what you'll start to see is the plain gray concrete that you see on the back side of all of the precast if you were inside the garage. So instead of it having a darker material and with brick and such on that side, it'll just go to no returns and be the gray, smooth precast. This is the northwest corner. Takes away all the canopies and the gratings. Looking down the west side, looking south. Lose a lot of detail with items like this that try to work their way back into one thickness of precast so that it's a little more cost effective to produce. Northeast corner, looking from kind of where the Chertenbach Brookside apartments and such are. A little less impact on this side. Most of the canopies and stuff that you still see on here are on the north light structure. Very little canopies on the actual parking structure. Southeast corner. And a few of the flat facades. These are a little harder to tell the difference between the three-dimensional images, do a little better job, but these were slides that were in the original presentation. Kind of an overall bird's eye difference between the two from the southeast.
The view with the canopies on, but everything else off.
No, I don't have a real-time actual model here. These were the printed images that we had at the council meeting in October. So we thought this would be the best way to bounce back and forth between something you guys have seen previously mm-hmm. and then what it would look like now, more or less.
This question may be premature. You may be coming to this, but some of these changes are things like the canopies could be added later if the project started to come in under budget. And some of these, like I'm wondering about these cornices along the very top, maybe integral to the actual concrete that's poured or the panels that are shipped. And
correct.
I'm wondering if you're going to talk about what are things that could be added back later, or what are things that are going to be permanent that we'd have to live with forever?
Right. We hadn't planned on breaking it out that way, but that's pretty easy to talk about. I think you're right on there that the canopies are things that stand a good chance of being able to be added later. Cloth canopies are pretty easy to add in. Some of the steel ones with some embeds and certain structural support might be a little harder to add, but we might be able to, in the value engineering process, work with the contractor and their subs to try to make precautions that those things could be added back.
Yeah, that was actually my thinking, but this is question portion,
right.
I'll save my comment for later.
Yeah, but they are, you're right, with the canopies are probably our easiest one. Dealing with the cornices, the precast items, the brick returns, all those sort of things would be next to impossible to come in later and put back on.
That's interesting.
They're pretty integral to the structural part of the project.
Yeah.
The steel gratings, which are in the openings, we'll need stainless steel cables there or those. I would guess that we would have an opportunity before the stainless steel cables were bought and installed to say, okay, instead of that, let's do the metal grating. It's not the easiest thing to make that we have to make it in a very timely manner because all those gratings will take quite a while to fabricate. There may be also some issues with holding costs long enough, as steel prices are one of the commodities that fluctuate quite a bit in the industry. So asking a contractor to hold for more than 60 days is pretty tough on a lot of things, and it may be 8-9 months before a decision like that might be able to be made.
I appreciate that, but we could get lucky and the EU would fall apart and then we could buy this stuff on the cheap.
Maybe. So that's pretty much the slideshow on the PDF. We can certainly back up and cover a little bit more. I know that Dave has some other slides on the PowerPoint presentation to talk about other cost savings opportunities and such that aren't quite a visual impact on the outside.
Let's talk. Can we talk about this detail?
Yeah, I guess I'd ask you if we want to get a consensus at least on the architectural options before we start talking about some of the other details that we'll.
I'm going to start by saying that this garage is costing us $23,000 and $323,000 for parking space, something like that. And taking this detail off makes it $22,925. For me, the loss of this detail is dramatic. And Mr. Blattel says we can afford it. I think it's an investment that we need to make this a special building.
Another thing that we have learned with the Fifth and Walnut Garage is that if we make changes, it's incumbent on us to go back to the public and make sure that they understand what was built, because a lot of the problem with Fifth and Walnut was, you know, during the design and public comment phase, one thing was shown and then a different thing was built. And I may be speaking, those of you who have been here longer may be able to correct me on that if I'm misspeaking, but the main thing is to make sure that the public understands if we change something after all of this discussion. I think we could make the case either way. It's just important to communicate that to the public so they know what's happening.
I have to agree with the mayor on this. The for the amount that we're saving on these architectural changes, it makes a huge difference to the way the building appears. And I know that when I approved this or voted in favor of this, it was based on the plans that were presented and the special detail that went into this. So I would also concur. I think it's just too small an amount to not finish this in the detail that we had hoped it would be.
I agree.
I do as well.
You could almost argue that we haven't really talked about percent for art yet, if I recall correctly. We could almost argue that this is the percent. We were very pleased with the design that and so was the public with the design that was presented, and the attention to detail and beauty that the all of you engineers and designers have brought to this. So we kind of hate to meddle with it now.
Well, the consensus is we won't make any changes to the architecture. I don't think that we need an official vote on this, so we won't make any changes to the architecture elements, but I'll let Dave go through the other items that he's identified that certainly would not impact the architectural. And these were things that we would typically look for anyway as we're going through the project, as we're meeting with the contractor and finding ways to do things less costly. So I'll let Dave go through these, and we'll kind of talk about what our recommendation would be.
As I mentioned, we have been working with Killian Construction, so they have been giving us these costs for these potential reduction items. These next two slides, majority of these, or almost all of them except for this first bullet, are interior to the structure, so it should not have any visual impact to the images that you were just presented. So just to run through the bullets, and I'll go through the slide, and if there's any questions on any of these items, we can discuss them at that point. But cast the thinset brick with gray cement and an acid wash process. Talking with Chris and myself, we don't think that this will have any kind of an impact on the appearance. And it's actually a good deduct, in our opinion, to take. Reconfigure the interior stair tower precast wall panels. This would involve us working with the precaster. They've indicated that there may be some additional efficiencies in the production of their precast panels or the elimination of their precast panels. It may make the stair towers, in a sense, more open to the elevator lobbies, but it will not impact the appearance from the outside. So it's mostly an elimination of a material inside the stair towers, elimination of a wall panel in each of the three towers. There's a range to a lot of these items. That's because we still do need to work out the details with the contractor, with the precaster. The contractor's gotten a lot of these numbers from some of their subs, but you'll notice where there's a dollar sign and a deduct, they just don't have the information to present us with a dollar at this point. So those are items that we'll keep looking into as we go forward. Revised precast stair risers to metal pan stairs. Right now we have precast concrete treads and risers. There's an opportunity to look at the cost to engineer a metal pan stair that's infilled with concrete. Revise the stair railing details to mesh, from mesh to vertical elements. Right now we have the barrier interior to the railing is a stainless steel mesh. They're offering a deduct to basically use vertical pickets, more of, I believe we have them in several of the decks downtown here. Just a different stair rail detail. Revise interior cast in place vehicle barrier walls to a strand barrier system. This is similar to the barrier strand that you saw behind the precast openings on the exterior slide. On the interior of the structure where we have the ramp and the flat, there's a fall there as you go up the ramp. Right now we're protecting that with 3 foot six high concrete barrier walls. There's an opportunity to protect that with a row of strands instead of the concrete, and there's a deduct for going that route. Eliminate the traffic topping above the mechanical electrical rooms and the storage room. The traffic topping is a water proofing membrane that goes over the concrete. It's in a sense almost a belt and suspenders to the protection of those rooms. This is something we would want to have more discussion with staff in terms of long-term maintenance and what the plan would be for that if we were to remove this, but this is the number for that removal.
Yeah, I'm sort of doubtful about water protection where there's electrical equipment. We may be pound foolish or penny foolish.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be recommending this if there were not recommending this, but even putting this out there as a potential if there wasn't a cast-in-place post-tension concrete deck above it. Again, I think it definitely warrants some further talk with staff to take this deduction.
Before we go on, and the architects may be the best people. I'm not sure which of you is the architect, but okay. I may be the best to speak about this. I'm intrigued about this idea of removing interior walls around the stairwell that opening it up may have some security advantages, and also the appearance of security. That one of the things about the garage behind this building is that the stairwells are kind of dirty and urine soaked, and you go in a door and a door closes and you know you're no longer visible, whereas the garage at 10th and Cherry, when you're in the stairwell, you got glass, you know, so you're visible and you feel visible. And I'm wondering if this is a savings that might actually be a design improvement.
probably pretty hard to answer at this point. We haven't seen any drawings or had any conversation with the precaster yet, other than, you know, they went back after the council meeting to put their heads together on some potential savings from their standpoint. So I think bearing those things in mind, you know, we'll try to keep that forefront whenever they're proposing their layouts with some sketches and talking with staff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they probably share many of your concerns about, you know, safety and visibility and keeping those unwanted activities from happening.
Yeah. And again, you know, while these are not apparent from the outside, they may have an impact on the customer experience when they're in the garage, and that's something we might also ask you to consider. And I guess based on your previous answer, that's something that isn't really known yet, and it'd be kind of hard to, you'd probably have to put it in your software and get some visuals of what it would look like if you made these interior changes. But making the internal experience pleasant is also a goal of the garage.
And we'll continue to work on that item with the precaster. Both our engineers and the precaster engineers will have to get together, and we need to make sure that structurally we're still sound, and we don't need to tie to the building or do something different than what we're currently doing. Right now, the towers are separated from the structure, and if we lose some of those walls and some of that rigidity, we need to make sure that we keep the instructional integrity. So we have to go through this whole process. So that's definitely something we keep in mind.
Yeah, and that's going to take some time and money to figure out. So you're kind of walking a tightrope there.
Right.
If you have more comments, I'll hold my other observations till the end.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say a couple of things. Two things that are having a big impact on this garage. One is that we really wanted private developers to step forward, and they did, to build the condos, and that has made a tremendous visual improvement on the project and is saving the city a lot of money, because there's going to be some shared structural members and so forth, and you know the details of that better than I do. But one is that the private developers stepped forward. Two is that saving the city money, because they're sharing some of the expenses of those structural members. And the other thing that we did to add, what was it, $300,000 to $500,000 to the garage, was leaving Short Street as a through street. When we subsequent to or as part of those discussions, there was this issue of, you know, could you put Wah Street through or Hitt Street through, and each of those projects was something like $5 million for a block. And so here we are, for $300,000, we're getting connectivity between Broadway and Walnut that doesn't cost $5 million. So that by adding $300,000 to this garage, we are improving the traffic flow downtown without having to spend the $5 million to put Wall Street through. And it's also something that will happen now, as opposed to, you know, when would we ever put Wall Street through? If we decided today to proceed, it would probably be years before that would ever get done, and there would be some taking of land. And here we already have a street. It's not the ideal, but it does provide the connectivity. So there's really actually a $5 million savings built into this $300,000 expense to put Wall Street, or to put Short Street through. I mean, somebody can correct me if I've got those facts wrong, but I mean, I think that was our sentiment when we were looking at that. I don't know if we really discussed it explicitly when we looked at, I think Glasscock was here and had drawings of what Wah Street might look like if it went through. That would also put a signal awfully close to College Avenue.
All right, so the intent with the interior, I think, from the staff side, is that we intend to pursue these versus the outside of the building, and certainly won't make any changes that would materially affect anyone's safety unless it improves it. in which case, obviously, we'd do that.
Yeah.
The have we gone through the second page of changes?
No, I think we probably want to spend a couple minutes going through these.
Very quickly.
But let me add one thing about the putting the table rather that stands possibly looking fairly cheap to me. I could be wrong about that, as opposed to a wall.
Changes,
pardon me?
Changes the aesthetics, that's for sure.
I'm not. But again, those are recommendations you would make to us. I'm just not seeing big advantage here yet.
You know, it's a cost savings. We do it. We've done it both ways. You know, I've done them where it's half wall, half strand. It's kind of a preference. Some folks like it because it keeps the interior of the structure a little bit more open. You don't have the walls down the middle. You get a little more visibility around the corners. Certainly, either one is capable of doing what we really want it to do structurally, is to stop the car from going off and going down 5, 8, 10 feet to the next deck. So it's certainly something we can keep discussing with staff and done either way.
I think the goal with all of these interior things, which, I mean, if you're like me, I don't feel qualified to address whether we should be changing stair rail details from mesh to vertical elements or changing the traffic topping. Yeah, I think that's kind of a question that I'm hoping that you'll leave with the engineers and our public work staff to go through these. We know there's about, is it about $220,000 worth of interior changes, something like that maybe?
No, everything that's identified in this slide that has a cost to it is in the range of $124,000 to $156,000.
Right.
That's the costs that have been identified.
As we know from now. So, I mean, that would be the goal. As we go through this project, we would start making those sorts of decisions which would result in cost savings, because we think that if you look on the last page, you'll see all of this four alternates that were also bid. And right now, none of those four alternates are funded in the contract that we've awarded to Killian at this point in time. So things, for example, like car charging stations. The infrastructure is in place for those car charging stations, but we're not purchasing any car charging stations at this point in time. The alternate number two would add almost $65,000 to install pavers, brick pavers, in lieu of either a concrete or an asphalt surface. So from Broadway heading north on Short Street into the garage, that section would add about $65,000. The offline validator, I think, is an easy one. It's only $934. That has to do with the parking system. Alternate four, I don't think we have to worry about. That's basically just informing the city what the cost for our maintenance of that parking system is going to be over 5 years, and those costs will be considered operational costs going forward, so it's really not a capital cost at this point. So the main things that we have to be concerned about, we'd like to get your input from, are on the first two items, the importance of finding a way to include the car charging stations, or whether we should also try to find a way to fund the brick pavers over traditional concrete or asphalt.
So the infrastructure's there, car charging stations could be placed 5 years from now if there are a number of electric vehicles out there.
Yeah, that would be one approach, would be to just do that later. I am assuming that the brick on Short Street is in bad enough shape that you can't just leave it.
Well, it's already gone. We've already removed it. We have it in storage right now, and the intent would be that as we're replacing other sections and repairing other sections of brick streets in Columbia, like for Cherry Street, we'd use some of those historic brick
pavers. That's a good idea.
In that area. So these would be modern brick pavers if we elected to do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested in the opinion of the other council members, because this is in the scale of what we're spending for the Percent Per Art project, and it's an aesthetic issue. Is there an ongoing expense in terms of snow removal and maintenance with these that disadvantages them? I mean, I don't know how the...
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, if you look, for example, I look at the crosswalks that we have out on Broadway, where we've installed those crosswalks decades ago, and they're still holding up pretty well to the snow and the snowplows. So I really don't think maintenance is really going to create much of an issue. I think I'd asked John, and John's not here this week, but I'd seen some initial numbers. We asked him to kind of life cycle and compare the cost of brick streets to traditional asphalt, which may have to be overlaid every, and John, Dave can maybe answer this question, about every 7 years, so there's a cost associated with the ongoing maintenance of asphalt, whereas brick pavers can probably be down for probably 20 to 30 years with not much maintenance. So when you look at the life cycle cost of brick pavers, they're probably close to being equal to what we would spend over 20 to 30 years on a traditional concrete or asphalt street.
I guess I'd, you know, again, under the theme that this could be a very special building, I would sort of favor going that route if it's the will of the council. I'd be interested to see what they have to say about that.
I will just throw out, folks in wheelchairs tend to hate brick streets, and you know, it just it makes it harder to get around. If they do get wet, it's it makes it very hard to grip, etc. But the modern pavers are slightly better than the cobblestone type brick, but I think it's still not.
And then preferred. The solution is you can have a different surface crosswalk so that it makes it easier for wheelchairs.
The pedestrian surface needs to be highlighted and contrasting to the normal street surface, so the thought might be for the actual crosswalk going east to west across Short Street might just be concrete or asphalt.
Yeah, and as I recall, there's going to be a sidewalk along Short Street through the garage. Is that still correct?
That's correct.
And if that sidewalk is not 30 inches or 36 inches, but let's just say 4 or 5 feet, then that may satisfy people with disabilities. And we might even, if there's time in our design cycle here, would be to ask the Disabilities Commission to, if we could actually just defer that question to the Disabilities Commission to.
I think I know what they would say.
I see.
One of the cost-saving measures I wanted to look at was the underground piering and foundation for the retail space, the commercial space. I understand we included that in their lot purchase. And has anybody broken that out to see what that really costs to do all that? Do you have any idea?
I don't have that breakout from Killian right now, no.
I know in a garage, any large commercial building, you put a lot of money underground. I mean, millions of dollars underground that you don't ever see. When they did Fifth and Walnut, I remember how big that hole was and how much concrete they poured in there. And I just wonder if we didn't give a lot away with having to put those piers and walls up for that commercial building, if we didn't give too much away. And also with stormwater, we're handling all the stormwater for the commercial building.
Putting up the combined... Well, we're putting up the combined footings, and then they have another putting in all their foundations.
Right.
But they're sharing the cost of that, is it?
No. We're paying for it.
The estimate that we included in there originally, the land cost was $125,000. The estimate at the time for the concrete was around $25,000. You've got to remember, that's a pretty small site. I mean, overall, I think it's like 2,800 square feet, and so the perimeter walls and excavation is really not a huge amount.
How far down are they going?
We're on spread footings. Mm-hmm. So there's the soil stabilization, there's a soil stabilization, and then there's a spread footing. So we're not drilled piers in the sense of 40, 50-foot piers. That foundation type is more cost-effective than having drilled piers into rock. We would have the foundation along the south side of that building for the garage. A good portion of the load is ours. It's an incremental upgrade to go and include their load in it. But then there are spread footings on the north side that obviously the garage wouldn't have needed. We're not building any walls. The dividing wall between the garage and Northlight is a Northlight constructed wall.
Yeah, they are contributing that.
Yeah, all on them.
And that would either be facade or that wall wasn't there. But we're not doing a double wall. It's the Northlight wall and then the garage.
We don't really have a feel for it, what kind of money that costs.
I don't right now. Something we can break out from. We can ask Killian to break that number out.
Of course, the other thing that having the Northlight building there is saving us is the fact that two-thirds of that Walnut Street garage is basically their facade. We're not having to put any facade on that. They're building the entire facade on
right.
That side.
And it's going to really improve the visual impact of the street and the traffic, foot traffic flow and all of those things. If we were going to do, I think the consensus that I'm hearing from my colleagues is that we don't want to meddle with the design too much, that we were very pleased with it. And if we had to pick one thing, I'm thinking the steel canopies is the easiest thing to leave off and do later if we really felt that we wanted to bank some costs, because it's a pretty big, that's the biggest of all the numbers, and it's something that could be easily added later.
I'm seeing no consensus, though, to stop that. I think that makes it look too abrupt.
I agree, absolutely. I think the canopies are crucial. And in terms of the brick, if it were possible, I have to agree with the mayor that I think that would be aesthetically desirable. My only concern, I know, is we've mentioned it several times, but haven't said more about it, but I would not want any of this to be in place of our Percent for Art project, which we haven't discussed yet, unless...
We've already really gone forward with the Percent for Art, and they've commissioned the three artists to...
We already have a meeting scheduled with those three artists to go over those preliminary designs.
I would agree with Ms. Anthony and the mayor on the brick. I think it's a valuable, historic, even though it's new, element that really adds to the downtown and mirrors what's on the other side of Broadway. And
it might be interesting to actually cost out the the life cycle cost of the...
We have done that already.
You've done that.
Mm-hmm. So yes, it's pretty much a wash when you look at over 20 to 30 years. There is a small upcharge for the brick, but not a whole lot. And I think this is something that certainly the Historic Preservation Commission is supporting. In fact, I'm surprised that Brent Gardner's not here today. I know he was here at the last meeting to want to talk about it. So I'm pretty sure that I can say on his behalf, though, that's something that Historic Preservation Commission is in full support of. So kind of what I'm hearing is there's a consensus to really not change the architectural elements, the other interior elements. Staff, public works staff, will work with the with Walker Parking and Killian Construction to identify any changes that might be beneficial to reduce the cost of the project. And we will attempt to include enough savings, at least, to include the Short Street brick pavers as part of the construction contract. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right, and I want to add one thing. If you, in a net present value analysis of the structure, I think all of us would agree that we are seeing more demand than when we, you know, first consummated this plan. And obviously, with more demand comes the opportunity for charging what the market bears, and you know, with the residential development in that area, with the fact that this is right next to the art district, and I just see explosive activity in that area, particularly with the bus system, which is really going to be part of that whole project. So I see the cash flow coming into this project over the next 20, 30 years surpassing what we had envisioned when we started, which I think makes it easier to make these, to justify these estimates.
So to me, the question becomes, can we afford to build this and pay for it? And I'm going to ask finance. I see John Blattles here. We want to take $2 million out of retained earnings. What does that leave our retained earnings in the parking fund?
Updated numbers ran today. Approximately $700,000.
Okay. And we're doing a loan of $1.3 million from the designated loan fund?
That is correct.
And with those in mind, adding on that $142,000 onto the cost of the garage, $142,000 payment, we can make the payment out of the parking fund to pay all this back?
Okay. Yes.
Any other comments by council? I think we've achieved consensus.
Anything else?
Anything else on this issue?
In the agenda tonight, in the meeting, there will be an item about a TIF note to help secure financing for the hotel. Tony, you... have a letter here. Would you like to walk through it?
I do, and I've asked Robert Hollis to be here today because Dave Palmley couldn't be. I think there was some concern last time about the status of the developer's financing, and so I've provided you, courtesy of the developer, Dave Parmley, a letter from Midland States Bank, and I think the important information that you want is pretty much in the first paragraph that basically says that Midland Bank is willing to provide financing under the attached Exhibit A, and you see a lot of the conditions. There are still a lot of agreements that need to be worked out. I did speak to Dave Parmley this weekend. He was hopeful to close on July the 6th. It doesn't look like they'll meet that date, but it'll be shortly thereafter. There's lots of maneuvering going on back and forth between operational agreements and financing, and the fact that you will issue the TIF notes tonight obviously send a signal. It's basically a pledge of our increment to the developer's project, which certainly strengthens the ability of the Dave Palmley to secure his financing. But even that aside, I think you have in front of you a letter from his bank indicating that the financing is a go on this project. It's just basically a question of dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's on all the agreements that are associated with this development before it actually closes. And Robert Hollis is here today, too, if you have any specific questions. But another one of your concerns, I think, is any risk from the city. There is no risk for the city from issuing these TIF notes. These were envisioned as part of the agreement, the redevelopment agreement that was assigned when the TIF project was approved by council a little over a year ago. Again, they're just simply a pledge that should the increment develop, once this hotel is built, that the city will reimburse reimbursable costs to the developer up to $3.2 million plus the cost of issuance, as you see, as part of this agreement.
Mm-hmm. Let me add one thing. I think this is, for most of us, a complicated financial transaction. And it's pretty easy for laypersons like us, particularly those who aren't engaged in the process, to say, so the city is giving them $3 million. I mean, that's, you know, we're issuing notes, you know, I hear this question a lot, and I think it's important that we provide clarity to people who ask, and the clarity is that we are obligated, we have no obligation to the success of this, our failure of this hotel. I mean, there's a big hole out there. There's some heavy equipment. There are a lot of people out there working today. And I think this is going to be a very special addition to that part of downtown. I'm really excited to see it. But I think it's very important that we be able to articulate to the public who is not engaged or has the sophistication to understand this, the complexity of this, that the city has no money at risk here. This is not MAMTEC. This is a financial risk incurred by an entrepreneur, and it will succeed or fail on his efforts. And I'm confident that he will succeed, but we are not at risk.
Yeah, this was a project, obviously, that was approved by the TIF Commission after extensive review and City Council, who agreed that this project would not move forward but for the use of TIF. And the amount of TIF that was approved for this project was $3.2 million. But as you so eloquently stated, if this project fails for any reason whatsoever, the city has no liability.
Mm-hmm. And I guess a couple of points, and you can correct me, or Mr. Blattel can correct me if I'm wrong here, but way to make the public make this clear to the public would be to make this make the analogy to a home mortgage, is that this is the letter that a borrower would get before closing, which is commitment, and that the actual signing is
documents
like the closing, and that we're, if I understand correctly, we are not issuing the bonds tonight. We are simply authorizing Mr. Blattel to issue the bond when he sees the market conditions are correct.
Correct.
And that this is our signal to the bank that we will issue the bonds, that Mr. Blattel is authorized to issue the bonds when the Midland and Mr. Parmley move forward, and that it's a chicken and egg thing, and that we're putting this big garage here, and so this is really kind of a minor addition to that reassurance that the city is serious and supports the efforts of the developers that have put forward their time and money and reputations.
You're absolutely correct.
Anything else?
That's all we have.
All right, let's take a break and plan to start promptly at 7:00.